Following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, December 3rd, 2018.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, beautiful day here in Sonoma County. It was so nice to see the blue skies, and it feels like you can breathe once again. I mean, my goodness, these fires were just devastating for all of us. Well, anyway, I have two special guests with me. Joining me in the studio is Therese Mangamnum and Lois Perlman, members of the North Coast Coalition for Palestine, one of the sponsors of the National Sibel Conference that was held yesterday on defending our children from Palestine to the United States of America. You know, this is it's going to be a very interesting show for me, and I really want to encourage my listeners when, as they listen to the show, as we cover a lot of the material that we are covering, to have an open heart. Put aside your politics. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're for abortion, against abortion, a Republican, a communist, a socialist, a Democrat, no matter what. We're going to talk about children and the perils that they're in across the globe. You know, and as many times I say on this program over and over, the children are our future. You know, and we have to really look at that. We have to, I remember a long time ago, you know, when the whole hippie culture came forward, you know, and it was really a very, very exciting time for me, because they came out with a lot of good stuff. And there was one poem that they came out, "Children Learn What They Live." You know, and how they live is how they project themselves into the future, how they respond. You know, it's really interesting. One night I was watching television, and there was a documentary on, they made a comparison between Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin. And they talked about their childhoods, how violent their childhoods were. And so what ends up happening, they turned out to be two violent dictators who had no compassion or no feeling for anybody, but just a sense of revenge in their heart. And what's so interesting, when you listen to the story of Adolf Hitler, he was a vegetarian and he loved animals. You know, so there was that other side of, like, just like all of us human beings, we have two sides, but the one side that we have to put in check is that violent side, that reactive side, that side that thinks that we have to go to war, that we have to destroy rather than build up. So I'm just trying to encourage my listeners to have an open heart, an open mind, and start asking yourself, you know, what is going on here? Why are we having these problems? Why are children suffering the way they are? I mean, I just became a great grandmother, as I talk about it all the time. You know, as you can tell, I'm very, very excited about it. But when I look at this precious little miracle, I realize that all children should be taken care of in that manner. Well, I'm going to read a little just to open the show. I'm going to do something a little different on my two guests. We're going to devote most of the show to them, but I just want to read this poem. I wrote this a while back. I think I took my daughter to a protest, and she was asking me, "Mommy, what is going on? You know, why do we hurt each other so badly?" And so I wrote this poem. Why? What does it all mean? So I'm going to read it very slowly, and this is just doing something a little different, but kind of to get you to start thinking about children and to thinking about how they might be questioning things, how they might be looking at things, especially in today's world. We have all this electronics. We have all this visibility. I mean, I see babies playing with iPhones. So you can imagine all the information that young people are getting. They know a lot more than we realize. So here we go. A child sat by a lake one day asking, What does all this mean? Who am I? Where am I going? How do I fit into the scheme? I sat down beside him. I looked into his eyes, and I saw the reflection of so many whys. I've too questioned my child. There's so much to say. But in all my searching and knowing, I can't show you the way. I can only try to explain what I see. Maybe you can show me how it should be. You see, life has many a game. The hardest to play is the one for fame. When we look for fame, we look for power. In that quest, you might say, man has wasted many a life, many an hour. Are we all so ant-like and insecure that for fame and power, so much we endure? The game of war, it's not hard to understand. It's just fighting and killing man to man. What is hard to understand are the men who are willing. They fight in the name of pride and nation. Pride and nation, my God, I see no reason for this frustration. The amazing yet saddest part is all wars are fought in the name of peace. So you see, my child, I too ask why. So that's something to think about. You know, lots to think about. You know, that's what Women's Spaces is all about, I hope, is that us women, as we sit around and we listen, that we think about things. We think about what's going on. Well, oh, God, I think about that poem, and I think about the conversation I had with my daughter. It's hard to believe she's a grandmother, and those many years have gone by. It's hard to believe today is December 3rd. You know, where did the other 11 months go? I mean, they went pretty quick. Hey, I want to do a shout-out to the Redwood Cafe and to Shekinah Black. I'll tell you, we went and saw Maria Muldaur concert, and it was alive and hopping. I mean, that woman is so inspiring. I looked at her. I saw her energy that as she was singing, all of a sudden, I became 16 again. I mean, it was just an amazing concert. You know, it was really, really exciting. I really enjoyed seeing her. And, you know, there's many, many of those people coming out right now that, you know, from the oldies and goodies times, and it's really amazing to see how good they look and how wonderful that they are still performing. Well, I have a few announcements to make. Tonight, from 4 to 5 p.m., we're going to be talking about the Palestinian children and many of the other children across the globe, but there's a special program on tonight, Monday from... That's tonight, December 3rd, from 4 to 5, speaking of Palestine, and it's a cultural show. So you might tune in to KBBF 89.1 FM. And, you know, we're kind of expanding. We're kind of expanding our coverage. You know, we're getting more and more English speakers and more, a little bit of controversy. And, you know, the most important thing is to recognize this is our local public radio. It's bilingual. I mean, amazing. We have languages. People speak in English. They speak in Spanish. We have programs that are English and Spanish, Spanish and English, indigenous languages, all kinds of things happening. It's important, folks, support us. You know, so go on to www.kbbf.org, and if you look on the right-hand side, you know, you'll see it says donate. You know, you can become a sustainer for $4.99 a month. You can make a donation. You can talk to a business owner and say, hey, come on down. Make some announcements. Let the public know, especially our bilingual community. Let them know what's going on. It's very important that we support these local radio stations. You know, they're the ones that come through. You know, during the fire, I mean, KBBF was alive and well for all the different things that they did. Well, another announcement I have is to mark on your calendar this Wednesday, December 5th, Unshackled. It's the monthly discussion group about racism. It's happening at the Arlene Francis Center. That's at 99 6th Street in Santa Rosa, and it's from 6 to 8 p.m. in a wonderful, wonderful African-American woman, Dr. Jacqueline Lawrence, leads the discussion, and it's so open and so inspiring to hear people talk about how they're trying to overcome some of the racist thoughts, some of the racist feelings, trying to get to know each other, trying to be honest in their communication. So I really encourage folks to come down. Bring your young people, the teenagers. You know, very important that they talk about these things, you know, that we're out in the open and not to be afraid that, you know, we all have racist tendencies. We've been brought up in a racist culture. You know, it's good that we sit down and we talk about it. We open our hearts and our spirits, and maybe that's another step towards getting to know each other and maybe making a better world. Again, our children are the future. We've got to introduce them to better ways of doing things. Well, one last announcement I have here. The goddess is alive and well. I can't believe it. This is going to be the 24th anniversary of the Goddess Festival up in Sebastopol. And I met a woman by the name of Chris Free Woman. I love that last name. I got to find out if she was born with that name or she gave it to herself. But I love it. Chris Free Woman. And she's one of the new co-founders. I mean, she's one of the new people that's handling the Goddess Festival. And it's going to be happening. That's going to be this weekend, December 8th and 9th. It's going to be at the Sebastopol Community Center. And it sounds like it's a wonderful, wonderful happening. It starts from 11 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock in the evening. And that's going to be on Saturday and Sunday, the 8th and the 9th. Wow, the 24th annual Goddess Crafts Fair. I remember the first one they had. You know, we're 24 years ago. Wowee, wowee, wowee. Well, there's a lot to think about. Let me tell you once again that Goddess Festival is going to be December 8th and 9th from 11 to 7 at the Sebastopol Community Center. Boy, Sebastopol has all the fun, huh? A special shout out to Chris, for a Free Woman for taking over, and I think that she has another partner. No, that's about it. That's her name. I just want to give her full credit for taking over. You know, it's hard. These festivals are hard. You have to really be committed. So drop in and say hi and see some of the wonderful crafts they have. Well, it's that time. One last thing. The Sonoma County Gazette has hit the street. Remember, I do the articles sent to Rosa Snippets. So if anybody out there in Santa Rosa is listening, you know, you got anything that you want to let me know about that you want me to put in the paper, make sure you email me at Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, at women's, womenssspaces.com, and we'll see what we can do. Well, like I said, we're going to be talking about children. We're going to be talking about kind of I would consider it somewhat of a heavy conversation. For me, it's going to be a little bit of a heavy conversation. I'm usually a little bit more on the conservative side on the radio, but to bring up some of these issues, you know, like I said at the beginning, we have to have an open heart. And, you know, about 2 years ago was when I found this song, By My Silence, I Give My Consent, and it's sung by Ellen Booksdale and Nick Annis. And, you know, this song really says a lot to me. You know, it really does. By my silence, I give my consent. You know, when we see something happening and we don't say anything, we're kind of saying, that's okay. Or if we don't vote, we say, let somebody else take care of it. What do I care? You know, so what if the children are harmed? Maybe so what if they take food stamps away? There's nothing I can do about it. You know, all those different things that we do that creates a sense of silence, that we're not doing anything. So what we're saying is, if we see something negative, we're saying it's okay. You know, and this song was written, Martin Buber wrote a poem during World War II. You know, first they came for the communists. I wasn't a communist, so I didn't care. Then they came from the on and on. And finally, when they came for me, nobody was there. So that's the idea behind the song. So listen to the words. By my silence, I give my consent. You know, think about it. And think also, as you're listening to it, oh, I'm sorry, it was Martin, how do you pronounce that, Ken? Niemöller?
Yes.
Martin Niemöller, who wrote that. And it's a very, very powerful poem. I mean, I've read it many, many, many times during, especially when times are, you know, kind of get down. You have to remember, You know, by your silence, you give your consent. And I don't want to give my consent to these things. So I have to open up my mind and my heart and my mouth. And also my pen, you know, to support causes, you know, to go into my power, all kinds of ways. You know, people say, I don't have time. I don't have time to be involved. Well, you know, you got to make a list. There's all kinds of ways you can get involved. The easiest way to get involved is to just listen and educate yourself. The second way is to make a donation. You know, the third way is to go to a protest, and then on and on. The fourth way is call your friend and remind them to vote. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that we can get involved. So let's go ahead and listen to By My Silence, I Give My Consent, sung by Ellen Booksdale and Nick Annis. And we come back, we're going to be talking with, you know, I'm going to ask her to tell me her name on the air.
Therese Muganim.
Muganim. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful name, and I just don't want to destroy it. Well, thank you so much for doing that, Therese. And now we're going to go ahead, we're going to listen to the song, and we'll come back, and we're going to have a lively discussion.
Not a communist, so when they came for the communist, I held my tongue, minded my own business like a good neighbor. I trusted the justice was done.
I didn't ask what was their crime, it was their sadness wasn't mine. I didn't care where they were sent. For my silence, I gave my consent. For my silence, gave my consent.
I am not Jewish, so when they came for the Jews, I had nothing to say. Branded with stars like cattle in taken away.
I didn't ask what was their crime, it was their sadness wasn't mine. I didn't care where they were sent. For my silence I gave my consent. For my silence I gave my consent. Socialist, took the powerless. I'm not a terrorist, I'm not an immigrant, I'm native born,
faithfully ignorant.
I didn't care what was their crime,
till their sorrow turned into mine, their sorrow turned into mine.
I was okay, 'cause I was a citizen,
and I was free.
I didn't care, now there's nobody there, no one to speak out for me. Give my consent.
Yes, by my silence, I give my consent. Such an easy concept. You know, when I listen to the song, you know, I can't help But think about these children that are, say, for example, at the borders, you know, and they're being pulled from their mothers and their fathers. You know, we have to, when I listen to that song, what becomes very clear to me is that if we are not careful, what happens to one child can happen to any one of our children. You know, if one person is unsafe, the whole world is unsafe. You know, we have to recognize that. That's why it's so important that if we want a good life for our children, all children have to have a good life. You know, it's a very selfish concept when you think about it. But it's the whole idea about loving your neighbor as yourself, the idea that before you can love your neighbor, you have to appreciate who you are. And it's the same thing. If you know, think about it. When you hold that child in your hands and you tell them how much you love them, how much can you really be loving them if your other children are unsafe and you're not saying anything? I mean, it's just something to think about, you know. I mean, it's just my humble opinion, but I think it's very important. Anyway, folks, for you just joining in, you're listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my two guests joining me in the studio, Therese Muganum. Oh, yay! And Lois Pearlman, members of the North Coast Coalition for Palestine. And they were one of the sponsors of the National Sibel Contest held yesterday on defending our children from Palestine to the USA. You know, before I give you a little bio, I don't know, one of you, can you explain what is the Sibel organization?
Sibel is an Arabic word which means the way. It also has another meaning, which is a spring that comes out of the earth, refreshing spring. So, but that's the name, the Sibel. But it is an organization founded by a grassroots organization founded by Christian Palestinians in Palestine, and it's an international organization basically working nonviolently to help people understand all over the world what the plight of the Palestinians is.
Well, thank you. Thank you for explaining that, Therese. Thank you so much. So let me tell a little bit about you, and then let's say hello, because this way our listeners can identify who you are. I'm going to start with you, Therese. Therese is a Palestinian-American, born in Jerusalem, Palestina, months before her country was partitioned by the UN, and over half of it was given to the Jewish people to create the State of Israel. Like hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, Therese's family fled the war in Palestine and ended up in Jordan for the next 10 years until they were able to come to America. Therese is a human rights activist telling the story of Palestinians from a personal perspective and standing up for the rights of all humans who are oppressed. Anything else you'd like to add, Therese?
That about covers it. I mean, there's so much more I could say.
Short but sweet.
Short but sweet.
No, I mean, you are very, very active. In fact, Therese really has had a great influence on my life as far as looking at what the conflict is all about, looking at what is happening to the children in the area. So I thank you for that. And Lois, and just say good morning to you. Welcome, Lois Pearlman.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you.
You know, Lois, I know Lois just a short time, a few years now, but I know her very well as a theater artist, a writer, a singer, and a political activist. She is the founding member. She's one of the founding, you're a founding member of the North Coast Coalition for Palestine and Pegasus Theater Company, and chief chicken soup and matzo ball maker for the Russian River Jewish community.
Yes. I just wanted you to know that, yes, I am Jewish.
You know, it's really interesting. You know, I'll tell you something. There was nothing like having matzo ball soup when I went to family gatherings. I'm also Jewish myself. You know, and it's interesting. Let me just finish this here with you. She recently presented a workshop about Jewish support for Palestine at the NorCal FOSNA conference. What is that?
FOSNA. That's Friends of Sibel in North America. Yeah.
And also performs her solo show, Last of the Red Hot Tenants, around the Bay Area and beyond. I think we did an interview about
we
that,
We did
Rose.
Do that. It's about gentrification. Oh, my God, a topic that just isn't going away.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, both of you. You know, I mean, we come from very different backgrounds. You know, Lois and I share the idea that we were both brought up in Jewish environments. I'm not a practicing at all. In fact, sometimes I think to myself, I kind of miss that community. But I still feel a part of it. I still feel somewhat of a, how can I say it? Somewhat of a responsibility to speak out. Let's put it that way.
Okay, so I will say that practicing Jew, I'm definitely being part of the Russian River Jewish community. I was actually brought up by fairly religious parents, and as I think about it, they were not Zionists, so they were very early post-Zionists. They just didn't, Israel was just not on their map. They were American Jews, and in fact, they were somewhat critical of Israel.
Well, from my recollection, because in 1948, when Israel became a state, mm-hmm. I was 8 years old, and I remember being around the radio. I mean, it was like nobody was breathing when they were taking the vote at the UN. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, Truman cast his vote, and then all of a sudden, it was almost like the whole neighborhood came out. It was such a rush. And all of a sudden, it was a sense of freedom. So on some levels, there's a disappointment. But before we get into that, before we get into the conversation about the children and Palestine and some of the other things that are going about the globe, let's talk a little bit about your beginning activism. Let's start with you, Therese. What was it all of a sudden? I mean, I realize, you know, all of a sudden your family being involved, you were just a baby when that happened. So you really, but there's still that, you know, one of the things that I did a lot of research before I did this show. And one of the things that I found out more than anything is how traumatized the trauma of war and leaving a country or leaving your area, even though you're just a little wee bit of a person, you are still affected by it. So how did you get involved, and what was your motivation to talk a little bit about your family and your background?
Well, you know, it's no small thing to be a refugee and an immigrant like so many people are in the world today. And I was both those things as a child, you know, before the age of 11. First, when I was, when I was a baby in 1948, my family fled the war in Palestine. Deir Yassin, which was a massacre in a neighboring village, happened, and it scared everybody. I mean, wouldn't you be scared? And my dad decided we got to get out of here, save the kids.
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that came up with the fires, over and over and over again, people would say it's like a war zone.
Yeah.
And I would say pay attention to that, because we have to understand what a war zone is like before we can end war zones.
Well, fear of losing one's life, basically. It's a very dangerous place. And so anyway, so my parents fled across the border. And as you said in my short bio at the beginning, we settled in Jordan. And like most Palestinians, we thought that we would be going back. But of course, while we were gone, 750,000 about altogether were expelled or fled Palestinians in what became that part of the country that became Israel. While people were gone, very quickly Israel went in and the military mowed down about 500 villages, just completely bulldozed 500 villages. And, just to make sure that people had nothing to come back to. So my dad saw the writing on the wall, and so we never went back. Of course, we weren't allowed to go back. We were in Jordan.
So how did you get to America? What was that?
Well, as I said, my dad especially saw the writing on the wall, and he decided to sign us up for another country. And one of my uncles was living in San Francisco at the time. I have to say that in the 30s and the 40s, a lot of the young Palestinian men, it was not safe for them to be in Palestine because of the situation with the Jewish people coming from all over and so much of the conflict. And so the young men, as best they could, their families just send them away anywhere just so that they can be safe. And so my uncle was in San Francisco, ended up in San Francisco, and he was the one that was able to sponsor us to come to America.
Well, our story is very similar then, because that's exactly what happened in our family. They came over from Russia, from the pogroms, all that was going on. Mm-hmm. And my uncle Eli, would they send him over, and within 4 years, he was able to sponsor his mother and my grandmother and her sister. So there was, you know, that's another thing that people forget, that we are an immigrant community. I mean, the only ones who aren't immigrants actually are the Native Americans, you know.
And that's
if you,
right.
If you even want to go, and you can say that even they're the immigrants because it was the animals that were. I mean, you can go back. I mean, we're all immigrants. I mean, we're mm-hmm. all traveling, and that's part of the human experience. How about you, Lois? What got you involved? I mean, your story is a little bit similar to mine. You know, I came from a very Orthodox grandmother, although I got to tell you something interesting about my grandmother. I was a kind of a troubled youth, and my grandmother always stuck by me, and she'd say, Elaine, it's in the book. No matter what, you're going to go through your whole life, but it's in the book that you're supposed to be doing these certain things to grow and to learn. So, I mean, I just thought I would throw that in.
Okay, so I came from my grandparents. I never really knew my mother's parents. My mother's father died before I was born, and I didn't really get to know her mother, who was at that point living in Chicago, and I grew up in Miami. But my father's parents were Orthodox. They went to a little Orthodox shul, not Orthodox as we see it now, not women, which my grandmother certainly didn't shave her head and wear a wig. They were Orthodox in the old style, which meant that they were religious, but maybe not so conservative, you know, so clinging to that old style of being.
Like for Passover, replacing the thing that sweeps up the dirt. I mean, that gets a little bit.
Well, they certainly turned on all their electricity on the Shabbos. I mean, they were not Orthodox in that fashion. Okay, so my parents then went to a conservative synagogue, and there were actually a lot of Israelis there, and that it was at that point that I heard my father in particular feeling that he didn't maybe like the attitude of those Israelis. Okay, so then we move on. I left Miami. I moved to New York City, eventually came to California. I sort of pulled away from Judaism. Didn't really think about it. I was all involved in trying to become a famous actor, which didn't quite happen, although I discovered that I'm famous here in Sonoma County. At any rate, so then coming back, moving to California, and to a small community, Guerneville, on the Russian River, I found myself, and having a child, my daughter Emma, I found myself going back to Judaism, not in a, in my own fashion. I call myself a Jewish pagan. Jewish pagan, which means that I don't necessarily believe in God. I believe in something, which is more of a pagan tradition, spirit in all things. But I definitely love the Jewish tradition. And I am actually studying Yiddish, because I sing in Yiddish. And so when I heard, I've been involved in other political things. I've been involved in anti-nuke work. I've been involved in gay and lesbian work. I was part of the group that brought gay pride here to Sonoma County. And when I heard the second intifada, I was listening to KPFA, and I'm going, my God, because Israel was not really on my radar. And I'm going, my God, what is going on there? And that was when I became involved, and then eventually went to Palestine and Israel, actually with my daughter, who separately decided to go at the same time that I did, and saw what was going on, and we came back, and we both did some things, but I couldn't find a group. I knew Therese. I had met Therese actually before I went. And but there was no group, and I did some writing. My daughter was part. She helped found a Rafa, Olympia Washington sister city, because she had spent two months in Gaza. But there was no group, and then eventually, our dear friend Mary Moore, when the people were killed during the Gaza flotilla by the Israeli soldiers, she contacted Therese and me and various other people. We got together. We went to meet with our then Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey. And eventually, we were the BDS. We had a big meeting. A lot of people wanted to participate, and we were the BDS group. Well, so we were the only group that hung in there, and we still support and sometimes practice BDS.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. And Therese has had, sounds like, an influence on both of us. You know, it's funny, let's talk a little bit about our KPFA experience, because Ken and I had just met, and I was going back and forth from San Jose listening to KBBF, and Dennis Bernstein was talking about Israel. And I'm going, what? Prime time? They're talking about it. I mean, it was so traumatic for me. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I couldn't believe how traumatic it was. And it wasn't until the Santa Rosa Junior College decided to have a conference where they were bringing the Jews and the Palestinians together, and we were going to talk to each other. And so I says, Ken, you got to go with me. You got to go with this. I says, because, you know, Dennis Bernstein, I actually even wrote a letter to KPFA, how dare them do something like this on prime time. And we went to this seminar, and it was we ended up in a group. It was Therese with the Palestinian woman. I was the Jewish woman. Ken was the Catholic man, and then there was an atheist. You know, there were the four of us, you know, having this conversation. And for me, it was literally the first time that I had any inclination that what was happening with the children and what was happening in the country and what was happening with all the trees that my family planted and what was going on. I mean, I was like, what? You know, I mean, it was so shocking to me. And it brought me back to a time when I was at the May Company basement with my mother, and I said to her, my mother made a remark about somebody, and I says, Mom, we're Jewish. People hate us. We shouldn't hate anybody. You know, and that was all of a sudden, my God, you know, all this was happening. So it was kind of the opposite thing. And then as I progressed in my consciousness about what was going on there, it brought me into more fields about what was going on with children. That was just, it was a global issue, a global problem, and it was in this particular area, you could focus on it, and you could see what was going on, and it, in my mind, it just had to stop. So that's kind of our story. So how did you take? So you decided together. You had Mary Moore, and the four of you decided to develop this group.
Well, not exactly. Mary got us to meet with Lynn Woolsey, and then from that, Mary actually called a meeting, a bigger meeting, and there 40 people showed up, and Therese and Rebel, actually, who you probably know, and I were there, and, well, 37 other people. But it was mostly at that point, Therese and Rebel and I stuck to it. And then other people have joined us and gone away, not because they don't care they come to our events, but they, you know, they maybe don't have time in their lives for this. But we now have a group of five people who have been together for some years, and so we do films, we do speaking, we have done a BDS campaign, but we're not currently really doing that.
The idea is education. Now, something is interesting, something very interesting I found out, and I started to touch upon it when I was on the Human Rights Commission, but when I start looking at the what's happening in Israel, what's happening in Palestine, you know, one of the things that I'm beginning to realize more and more across the globe, we're all victims, you know, even the soldiers, everybody's a victim. We're all caught up in this trap of not knowing how to get out of the trap, how to not war, how to get along, how, I mean, you have to ask yourself what's going on. And the thing that was so surprising to me was there was a General Declaration of Human Rights for the Child. And the United Nations embraced it. 190 countries signed on, except for three.
Mm-hmm.
Somalia, the Sudan, and the United States. And all these rights, or they say the right to equality without distinction on account of race, religion, or national origin, the right to special protection for the child's physical, mental, and social development, the right to a name and a nationality, the right to adequate nutrition, housing, and medical services. I mean, you go down the line, all these rights, and then when you think of these children, you think of the children in Yemen, you think of the children in Palestine, you think of the children even that are affected in Israel. I mean, all of everybody's affected. How does something like this happen, that the children are just... I mean, it's almost like we're becoming dumbed down or numbed down, like, oh, another kid, so what?
Well, if I may speak a little bit to that in relation to Palestine, it happens. It happens when a country is occupied by a brutal military that everybody suffers. And when the occupying power sees the potential of children growing up and becoming more of a problem for them, they focus in on young people, which is what is happening.
Well, it's the same as that's a, in fact when you go down when you go back to the Holocaust.
Yes.
When the Nazis were asked why they were going after, because the children were the future.
That's right.
And you have to wipe the children out because that's how you wipe the future out. I mean, people need to be aware of that.
And as Priscilla Wathington said at the conference yesterday, you know, a child is a person under 18 years old. And in Palestine, in Israel, Palestine, the average is about 700 children down to about age 12 and even younger. Are held in Israeli prisons every year and tortured and abused and beaten, you know, anything to get them to confess and to change. And, of course, with the Great March of Return now in Gaza, and by the way, as we heard yesterday, over half of the population in Gaza are children under 18, and 43% are under 15 years old. And so many of them, thousands of them, have been maimed, you know, by live fire. You know, many of them have been killed, but many more have been maimed. And it's because the children are our future. And when you think about, you know, the broader perspective of children in Yemen, what we're doing, what is being done in our name, the 85,000 children under the age of five, imagine that, under the age of five in Yemen have died of malnutrition because our so-called ally country, Saudi Arabia, is not allowing the supplies, the medical and the you know, food supplies to go in. And so these children are dying.
Well, let me ask you a question, Therese. What do you think is the motivation? I mean, I can't, you know, I listen to it, I think, oh, is it oil? Is it property rights? I mean, and also what I'm finding out is that there's so many people across the globe that are protesting all this stuff that
yes.
we don't even hear about. You know, it's just, what do you think the motivation is? I mean,
oh,
I can't buy it.
Are you talking about the motivation in Israel or the motivation in Saudi Arabia?
In Yemen, in Israel? I mean, this is all Middle East.
Obviously, we'll take one country at a time. I mean, in Saudi Arabia, I think it's power, control. You know, the Houthis have threatened our so-called political threat, because they have some contact with the Iranians, but I don't want to go there because I'm not an expert on that. So, but it is a political threat to the regime that is ruling. That's why they want to destroy, you know, all of those people who are connected in any way with Iran, who are the Houthis. Now, in Israel, Palestine, it's even more awful, as far as I'm concerned. And Lois, you can also speak to that. But I just want to say that, you know, you spoke about Judaism, both of you who grew up in that tradition, which is a religion. But there is an ideology called Zionism, which from the very beginning has been intent on getting all of Palestine without the Palestinians. And that's what has been happening over the years, ever since I was born, year by year, inch by inch, house by demolished house, family by, you know, exiled family. The Zionist, this ideology, they want all of Palestine, and they want to get rid of as many Palestinians as possible. That's the motivation, and I know you can talk more to that.
Okay. Well, I think you pretty much summed it up, but I'm going to read a quote from Avigdor Lieberman, who was the defense minister. I believe he just resigned.
Right.
He just resigned because Israel dared to even consider a ceasefire with Hamas. So he, but this is what he said before he resigned. I very much favor democracy, but when there is a contradiction between democratic and Jewish values, which boggles the mind, the Jewish and Zionist values, although as far as I'm concerned, those are not the same thing, are more important. It would be better to drown these Palestinian prisoners in the Dead Sea.
Well, that's pretty
bad. He actually said that. So they have from the very beginning, and there's documentation from the very beginning, although the UN gave a little more than half, I guess about 55% of Palestine gave. They took it. I mean, so the UN actually owned Palestine.
So back to here, we're talking about the children and the effect that it's having. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, we're hearing so much about Yemen now. I mean, it's almost like it's just clouding everything. And I want to remind people, it's real interesting, this thing that, like I said at the beginning about the hippie times, you know, this thing about children learn what they live. If children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. So here you have a group of are being criticized for who they are. They don't even know what the heck they are because they're just being criticized. They want to be, like you said, they want to get rid of them. They want to let them go, get out of the country. They learn to condemn. If they live with hostility, they learn to fight. So what are we doing? Are we developing, when we're looking at the children and we're thinking about our future, what is our future? And then when you look at, if children live with hostility, they learn to fight. They play these video games that is full of hostility. I mean, so it's constant. You got the wars, you got the justification, you know, get out, you know, and then you wonder why our children act out the way they do, why they go and shoot up and do some of the things that they're doing. Another thing, if children live with their fear, they learn to be apprehensive. If they live with pity, they learn to feel sorry for themselves. They live with ridicule, and you can go on and on. And so what these children are living with, and that's what we have to be aware of, is it's not very much for their future.
They're living with trauma is what they're living with, just like the children down, you know, at the border. I saw a thing I forget where I saw it, but on TV in one of the broadcasts, about a child that was taken away from his mother. You know, and was taken, was away from her for about 43 days. And when they finally were reunited, he completely rejected her. He just didn't have any, he didn't want to be hugged. And she was just weeping. And that, you know, and he was a small one. He's like a 3-year-old child.
Well, he's traumatized.
That's exactly right.
And he can't blame the authorities that did it. So who's the closest thing? He's gonna blame his mother, you know. And that's what, mm-hmm. you know, when you there's that saying, there but poor fortune you go you or I, you know. And the whole idea that if there's one child is not safe, all children are not safe.
That's,
I mean,
right.
To me, it's that simple. You know, so it's really, really important. You were going to say something, Lois.
I'm not sure what I was going to say, but I think you're right to bring this back to the children. The children, well, Palestine is what I know best, and somewhat at the border. Children are not only are they getting inadequate nutrition, not only are they subjected, particularly in Gaza, there's not any drinkable water in Gaza. You actually have to buy water in order to drink it. There's very little electricity. Children are not only being killed and maimed, but they are, as you said, being traumatized. So they are developing an entire generation, particularly in Gaza, but also in the West Bank and Jerusalem and East Jerusalem, where children are being destroyed. And I do believe that is very intentional, and that if you want to get rid of people, destroy their children.
It's been called a slow genocide.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a little musical breakdown, a little musical break right now. And there's a song. We're just going to play a little bit of it. Let's just play a little bit of it because the time is running out. And this is really, we haven't even gotten halfway what I wanted to do. But I want to play just a little bit of this song. It's a reminder. It was written by Michael Jackson. It's called We Are the World. And it reminds us about the children, that we are the world. You know, we are the children. And what's happening, not just, you know, we're talking specifically on some levels about Israel-Palestine conflict, also what's going on in Yemen, but there are so many countries, and our country right now, at the borders, what they're doing with the children, tear gas. I mean, come on, mothers, yes, and children, babies, tear gas. I mean, it's not the right thing to do. And also in our own country, I mean, what is it like if your food stamps are cut off? You know, what, you can't feed your child. What about medical? You can't get your child to a doctor. I mean, these are all forms of abuse of children. And the more you abuse the children, the less of a good future that we can be reassured of. So let's hear a little bit about this song, and then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Therese and Lois. We are the children. So let's start living a little bit and taking care of one another. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and we're coming to the end of our segment. I've been talking with Lois Pearlman and Therese Mugumnum from the North Coast Coalition for Palestine, and we've been talking about the children of the Middle East and in the United States and whatever. Oh. And we have one announcement. Lois, there's a special bill, I guess, that you
want to
talk about.
Yes, there's a bill. It's actually been sitting in the House Foreign Relations Committee since the end of last year, 2017. It was introduced by Betty McCollum of Minnesota, and the bill is called Promoting Human Rights by Ending Israeli Military Detention of Palestinian Children Act. act, because Palestinian children, if they are not Israeli citizens, then they are held in, they are tried in military court as opposed to civil court, the way an Israeli would be, or any Jewish person even living in the West Bank. And you can, our congressman, Jared Huffman, is not a co-sponsor. Jackie Speer from, I believe, South San Francisco, who is actually a Jewish woman, is a co-sponsor, as is Barbara Lee and Anna Eshoo and one other person from California whose name I can't remember. But I am suggesting that you call if you care about what the way that children are being treated in Palestine, that you call Jared Huffman's office. Call it in Washington or call it locally and say that you want him to be a co-sponsor. And the number is 4391.
And it's to tell them that we do not want our money used to abuse these children.
Right.
Okay, we have come to the end of our segment, which is amazing how quickly time goes by. How about websites? Any information? How can they get a hold of you?
I think the best way is to go onto our Facebook, which is kept very up to date, North Coast Coalition for Palestine Facebook. Just go on the internet and look that up, and we will pop up quickly. We put all of our announcements there. Anything that comes across our view that we think would be interesting to people looking at our Facebook. And also, we meet the second and fourth Monday between 3:30 and 5 at the Peace and Justice Center. If you're interested in joining us, we will not be meeting on the fourth Monday this week. I mean, this month, because of the holidays.
Do you have anything you'd like to say, Therese?
Just basically that there's so much on the internet. You know, you can go to the Sabeel website. That's S-A-B-E-E-L. You know, just Google Sabeel. There's Electronic Intifada. There's MondoWise. There's Who Profits. There's BDS. And so much more.
Well, thank you both for a great, great interview. Thank you, Lois Pearlman.
Thank you.
And Therese, thank you so much for being here. It's been very inspiring to me, and I hope my listeners got a little bit out of it. The most important thing is to ask yourself the question, you know, what can I do? What can I do to speak out for the unspeakable? I mean, it's very important. And if each one of us just do a little bit, and I want to thank you all for listening. I want to remind you that the show is going to be on again at 11 o'clock tonight. I'm really excited. I get to listen to my own voice in my own show. And if you want to become a member, just go on www.kbbf-.org.
She can wait.
Thank you, ladies.
So easily. She knows everything you do because of.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, December 3rd, 2018.